big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, Tommy, I hear it's snowing in the mountains.
Yeah, we got a lot of snow now in Colorado up above, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 feet now. It's a winter wonderland as we're recording this podcast, which can only mean a couple of things.
That we're going to have cruddy traffic, stalls on I-70, hard time getting to the mountains, and having to get the snowblower out. Is that what that means?
That's exactly what it means, but it also means we are in the midst of our snow tire testing, our off-road snow tire testing, as well as discussing the best all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive cars for the winter season.
Yeah, like if you look at the Chief Jeep behind me, if you're watching this, and if you're not, basically we've got a picture of our brand new to us, well, it's brand new actually, Jeep Wrangler. You took it up to the high country because it was snowing up there this week, and you tested three tires. We won't tell you the results, but tell me what you were testing and how to go, Tommy.
Why can't we tell them the results? The video's live.
It's not live yet.
Yes.
Oh, because we're time traveling. It'll be live when this goes up.
You betcha.
All right. Yeah, we can tell them the results. So what are the three tires that you tested? First of all, tell them what you did, and then tell them how you tested these tires.
So thanks to my dad's painstaking process of trying to find two more sets of identical wheels for our
three sets of identical wheels. I was driving Tommy over all over the Denver metro area, meeting with strangers, trying to get Jeep wheels so we could have three sets of Jeep wheels, and actually not identical, so we could tell them apart. So they had to be different.
Yep.
And that's sketchy to begin with, right? Because you're meeting with people, and they all turned out to be really nice, but you never know, right? Because you're meeting with people like in strange places. The one guy met me at the Walmart shopping center parking lot. That was nice. But the others, I had to go to their houses, which is always a little sketchy. Did you know that actually Jeep wheels are really easy to get in Colorado?
Yeah. But what I wanted was three different sets of Rubicon takeoff wheels. Because this Jeep is a sport, it's got some pretty small and wimpy sets of steel wheels on it. And for the snow tire test, I wanted to run Rubicon tire sizes, 285/70R17. And I wanted to run it on Rubicon wheels, factory Jeep wheels. So thank you, Dad, for going out and finding three sets of stock Jeep wheels in different designs. That was quite the feat you did.
Yeah, they range anywhere from like the cheap ones I got. When I say cheap, I mean they're all pretty good shape, but the cheapest ones I got were $180 for four wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And the most expensive ones were like $500 for four wheels. So what happens is people buy a Gladiator because they're the same bolt pattern, or a Wrangler, and then of course they want to put their own wheels on it, so they take the ones that came from the factory off, and then they sell them on either Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist, and then I stumble onto them, offer them like 25% less, and hope they take it.
Yeah, and you know they're really not worth much because there are so many Jeep people in Colorado that are doing these pull-offs. So initially, to get some more off-road worthiness to this Wrangler Sport, we actually went and found a set of wheels and tires that someone pulled off of. I think it was a Gladiator that we added to this little sport.
Yeah, that one actually came with a set of Falcons.
Yeah, but those were the MT tires, and then we did a few videos with those on this Jeep. And then, this was what I was really excited about, is three different tire manufacturers sent us three all-terrain tires to run through a number of tests, the first being our winter snow performance test. And we got three really exciting tires. So we got the new BF Goodrich KO3.
Yep.
Just came out. Yep. Three peak snow rated. All of the tires were three peak snow rated. We got the new Falcon Wild Peak AT4W, also three peak snow rated. And then on the more affordable end of the spectrum, we got the Firestone Destination XT All Terrain, also three peak snow rated. We tried to make it as apples to apples as we could. So stock Jeep takeoff wheels, standard street pressures. All tires were load range E, right? all in that same kind of tire category.
You know what rocked? If you've been watching TFL, you know that we have a new presenter, Jen, and she used to own a company where it was a mobile tire company where they would come to your place of business or your house and they would either swap out your summer tires or winter tires or swap out new tires for old tires. Anyway, the guy she sold it to, what was the name of the company, Tommy, you recall?
It's Elevated, I think, is the tire installer.
Yeah, there's a video up on all TFL. And then he came to our offices and he basically mounted those wheels that I bought with those three sets of tires. That would have taken like 4 days at discount normally.
Well, the problem is, so I wanted to go to our local discount, which is who we usually use. But when I logged on to make an appointment, which you kind of have to do this time of year,
yeah.
The soonest appointment they had was...
was March.
No, not that far. But not far off. Like, it was December 4th. So it was like a month away from when we started the series. And these Elevated tire guys, they came, they did the swap. Super easy to work with, fast to book. And it was a great service. They can do it anywhere. They can do it inside. They can do it outside.
I think they'll even store your, if you're switching from summer to winter, they'll store your tires that you're not using, which is great.
Yeah, and they have the machine to do the swap in their van. So they can not only, you know, remove and add tires to your vehicle, they can swap tires
and
on wheels.
And balance them.
And balance them, yeah.
Which is great.
So it was a really great service, and it made our life so much easier. But that was the first challenge. Then the second challenge, of course, was figuring out a way to test the snow capabilities of these all-terrains. So we have a hill up in the high country of Colorado that we use, and it's a nice hill because it's pretty steep. It's probably a 7 or 8% grade. It's a perfectly straight hill, and it's very high and a little bit remote, so we can get consistent testing. Even when maybe there's not snow on the front range, we can almost always guarantee there's going to be snow.
In the mountains.
Yeah, in the mountains. And this is very near to a ski resort as well, so it's always got snow on it.
We would tell you where it is, but whenever we're doing snow testing, people come by, and they're great. We love our fans, but it's sometimes hard to work when people want to kind of say hi to us and take selfies and, you know, ask us what we're doing. So we're not trying to be coy about this. We just need to get this done.
So the testing procedure is the same for all three tires. So we accelerated up to 30 miles an hour. On the way down the hill, we had a stop cone. I went full emergency ABS braking till the car came to a stop. And the reason we do this is because that is the fastest way to slow down a car, right? So there's a lot of kind of misinformation online about how to slow down in the winter. Some people say pulsate the brakes. Some people say threshold brake, right? And that is all great methodology if you don't have ABS. But the experts say if you do have ABS, go full, firm pedal pressure, engage that ABS, and let the vehicle computer do the work. So we ran all three tires through the braking test. Fresh snow for each tire, right, as best I could. It was pretty flattened down, so it was very consistent. And we got some pretty wild results. So the BF Goodrich KO3, this new three-peak snow-rated KO3, stopped in about 85 feet.
Mm-hmm.
The Firestone stopped in about 89 feet.
So not bad, 4 feet longer, not horrible.
And that's more or less within like the margin of error because, you know, I'm not a robot. I can't stop exactly at the cones, right? There's always going to be a little bit of discrepancy there. And then the Falcon Wild Peak took 177 feet to stop from the same speed.
Wow.
Yeah, really wild. And these are all three peaks.
Did you maybe hit some ice or something? Or
no, I don't think so. And it was interesting, like even maneuvering the Jeep around to our test course, the wild peaks were just sliding all over. They didn't have a lot of lateral grip. The back end was kicking out. The brakes were activating the ABS super frequently. Like they just don't have a lot of snow grip to the point where Alex and Case figured maybe there was some kind of like shipping coating.
No, we called them and asked them about that.
So
they said no.
Alex comes from the motorcycle world,
yeah,
and he has to brake in his tires, you know, to get the most traction out of them. So I'm looking for the exact wording here, but we did reach out to our contacts at Falcon, like, what's going on? Like, do we need to brake in these tires? And the word is from Falcon, there's no coating or residue on the Wild Peaks from the factory and no break-in period to set them up for maximum traction in all conditions.
Well, you know what? You weren't here for this because you just got back from a program, which we'll talk about in a second, where you're driving classic cars in Nashville, Nissans, of course. We told them what the results were because they were so, well, not great, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they said that they're curious to see your video. They weren't upset by it. They were just like, we really want to watch it. We want to find out what's happening, and we really appreciate the testing. And they were a little confused, but they're looking forward to actually watching that video. which, you know, today will be up on the Off-Road Channel.
Yeah, I wish I could say I knew why the performance was this dramatic. And, you know, at first, like, I was concerned, like, maybe I messed up the testing procedure. But then we saw similar results in the acceleration. The uphill section, we time from the bottom to the top, and I drive the vehicle very consistently to maintain traction with the ground, right? That one, of course, does bring a little bit of driver error into play. But both the BFG and the Firestone were within 0.1 seconds of each other.
Sure.
Like 10.88 versus 10.66. And then the Falcon took 14 seconds, right? So it took a lot longer, 40% longer to get up the hill. And it was just constantly cutting power, activating traction control. I had to be so ginger.
It could be that the Falcons are optimized for like mud or snow, not snow. I mean, mud, not snow, dirt, not snow. I mean, that could be one of the things.
But it is a three-peak snow-rated tire.
Yeah, right? But that doesn't mean a heck of a lot. That doesn't mean, first of all, the three-peak snow rating doesn't have anything to do with braking. It only has to do with acceleration. It has nothing to do with cornering. Once again, it only means that it's going to accelerate in snow better than a non three-peak rated one.
Yeah, I mean, and the reasoning here is the way they work. I had an engineer explain it to me is they have this testing jig attached to the back of a full-size truck.
Yep.
And then they use science to determine acceleration abilities of tires on a controlled environment. And it's a repeatable test that they can do across the line. And then if your tire meets those traction quotas, you are able to put a three-peak snow rating on it, right? But yeah, the Falcons were really kind of having a tough day out there. Same tire size, right? 285/70 R17 as the other ones, all load range E. So we tried to keep that pretty consistent as well. So excited to see going forward if we see any performance difference like in other terrains.
So last year when we did this, we actually tested snow aids. You remember that, Tommy?
I did.
And one of the snow aids that we found that actually, if you don't have a Jeep and you don't have the budget to swap tires and buy wheels, one of the snow aids that we tested that did really well is our snow socks. So let's talk about these guys.
So this is by a company called K&K. And snow socks, relative to the world of cars that's 130 years old, snow socks are fairly new. So, like, I could be wrong, but when you were a kid in the 1920s, they probably didn't have these.
Yeah, right? And in the 20s, there was snow all year round.
And uphills both ways.
Yeah.
But even like in the 80s, right, I don't think these were very prevalent. This is a fairly recent, last couple decades. And what this is kind of a replacement for a chain or for another traction aid. Now, this is very cool. So the way this works is that it hugs your tire. And then,
I mean, it's basically a donut, right, that you put over your tire.
Yeah, this netting provides the additional traction that you'd expect out of a chain or out of a different traction device. What's cool about this is they actually retain snow. That's a common myth, right? Part of the reason snow tires are so effective is not that they expel snow, it's that they retain snow in the tread blocks because snow-on-snow traction is actually very high. Rubber on snow, not so much, right? Rubber and ice, definitely not, but snow on snow is actually pretty. And then this also gives you some additional bite as well. Very interesting piece of technology. Now, it still is somewhat limited like the snow chain. This is intended to be used on difficult, short trips, right? If you're stuck, right, you stick these on. They're not meant to be used like over 35 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour.
It says up to 25 miles an hour.
Just like a chain, right?
But they're reusable. They are, well, according to the package here, they're saying you can put them on in 5 minutes. Is that true?
Very true. And if you look down here, this is interesting too. So Colorado, we have traction laws, and one of the little stickers on here not only says EU certified, EN16662, but the Colorado Department of Transportation approved alternate traction devices.
And do you put these only on the drive wheels? Or do you put them on all four?
Well, you can,
depending on if you have a front-wheel drive or a rear-wheel drive or all-wheel drive.
So if you have a front-wheel drive, you would want to put them on the front wheels, right? Yeah. If you have a rear-wheel drive, you want to put them on the rear wheels. If you have all four-wheel drive, you can kind of pick and choose. The best is going to be on all four wheels. But what Case and I found from our testing last year, we've done a bunch of testing with these guys in the past, is chains, horrible to use.
Yeah, well,
really challenging.
Since they're safe on alloy rims, which is nice, so they won't ding up your rims like chains can. I hate chains, Tom. Chains are such a pain in the tuchus. They're almost they look good when you see them in the store because it's nice and dry and nice and warm. But if you ever have to put them on actually in a winter condition, oh my gosh, I don't know how you truckers do it. These things are just like ancient technology.
Well,
and this is just much easier to slip on. It's much easier to store. It's not heavy. Chains are also heavy. You have a bag of chains.
Yeah, it's
those things weigh like 25, 30 pounds.
I mean, the trucker community will tell you, you know, it is an effective piece of technology, which is true. Truckers also have very different tires than a passenger vehicle, sure. Especially new passenger vehicles have pretty wide tires that are very low profile wheels, right? That's a challenge that chains are tough to get around. And I've tried a bunch. I've tried the cheapy chains. I've tried expensive chains. I've tried cables. I've tried some nicer cables.
We tried these like Amazon traction devices where they're like blocks that you
put. Oh, they're horrible. Those don't do anything.
Those don't do anything but make for a horrible ride.
But the chains, like Case and I were talking about this, they are such a tough piece of technology to install correctly. You know, it usually takes us a few tries to get them centered, to get them from slapping the heck out of the inner wheel wells. I personally hate them. And the snow socks are good. And we actually did some more durability testing last year with the snow socks. And we found that even over not just our little test hill, but a couple miles of driving down some snowy situations, they've held up pretty well. And you can also take them off and reuse them later. The key with these, we found, just like chains, is they come in a variety of sizes.
Yep.
So if you're on the K&K snow sock, for example, Amazon page, you want to make sure you size the size of the sock to the size of your tire.
Yeah, so this is an XL. I take it there's like, it tells you what size
yep.
tire.
Yeah, there's actually a little guide.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they include the gloves, which is nice. And super lightweight, put them anywhere.
And then, Tommy, if people are interested, should they click on the link below?
Yep, so we should have some links below. You know, this is an interesting discussion, right? Like, they are a sponsor, but they're a sponsor that we've vetted and that we've used and that I've recommended to friends and friends have used, and they really like them.
It's a game changer.
Yeah, they're really good, and they're just so much better than chains. They're not a replacement for a snow tire. Very important to know.
Yeah, unless you like driving around at 25 miles an hour or slower.
Yes, but in a pinch, they are very effective. They're really, really good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you're going up to, let's say, I don't know, your ski cottage or going skiing, and you get in a situation where, you know, people aren't being able to like drive up the steep part of I-70, which is very common. You throw these guys on and you're rocking.
So I will say, so in this Jeep test we did this year, it was the most pleasant of the snow tire tests I've ever done, because usually we're changing wheels in
a snowstorm,
4 degrees. Yeah, it was actually a balmy like 35. So it was really nice, perfect conditions.
This year we decided to do it early.
Yeah.
Before we get midwinter.
But yeah, I mean, it was crazy. First of all, I think for me, the winner of that, just based on that initial snow performance, the winner for me is actually the Firestone, the Destination XT.
Which happens to be the least expensive.
Yep. So typically the most affordable. I didn't talk about pricing as much in the video.
Yeah.
Because it varies so much from distributor to distributor and sizes to sizes. But typically the Firestone's a 5-year-old tire. And it's going to be the less expensive of the three. It's also the least cool looking. You know, the Falcon, part of the reason I think people love those Falcons is they just look so cool.
It's a good looking tire. It's a very beefy tire, Tommy. It looks like you're about to go and take on the round the trip world.
But the Firestones challenge. Yeah, the Firestones really performed well in the snow. BFGs, I think, stopped a little better. It's also a brand new tire. Super cool. I love that technology. I was in Alaska with them this year doing some off-roading. So I really like the KO3 so far. I think the snow performance is better than the two. It just seems to have a lot more grip across the board. Really impressed with that. And then the Falcon, maybe they're going to send us another set to do some other testing on. But from that initial performance, pretty bummed about that.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about some cars that we think are good in the snow and some cars that aren't. But before we get to that, I think we should talk about the elephant in the room, which is obvious, and that is if you want a good performing car in the snow, as long as you've got snow tires on it, it will do well. Whether it's front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, obviously all-wheel drive is going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
But snow tires are the easiest, fastest, and most probably expensive way to get good snow performance. Now, the trick with snow tires, of course, is that they're only good below 45 degrees, dedicated snow tires, and they will melt off your vehicle if it gets too warm. And we actually had that happen. Remember, we went up and drove to a Coeur d'Alene, and I had the snow tires. I had Blizzax on our Volvo V70R, and we got up to, it wasn't Bozeman, it was Missoula. And then going up that pass to get to Coeur d'Alene, we popped the tire because we had worn it, or I had worn it down. You were a young guy. I had worn it down to the metal, what's that called?
The cores.
The cores, yeah. So snow tires are limited in that you have to put them on in the winter and take them off in the summer unless you want to like burn through them. Now, there is a new kind of tire called an all-weather tire, and this was brought on because in Canada, they had legislated the fact that you need, I think it was in Ontario, if I'm not mistaken, that you needed to have some kind of a snow-rated tire in the winter. And so the manufacturers decided to build a snow tire that wasn't all about the compound, but it was also about the tread. And there are all-weather tires now that you can have all year round that do provide, I'm not going to say great, but I'm going to say decent winter driving traction. We've used them in the last couple of years. Which ones have we used? Do you remember?
So we had the Michelin Cross Climate 2s.
That's right, the Cross Climates, yeah.
Yeah.
The downside to them is they ride rough.
Now, there's some interesting, I had a discussion with one of the chief folks at BFG a while back about compounds and snow tire, and the general consensus understanding among the community is that a soft tire is going to work better in the snow, firm tire is going to work better in the dry, right? That a soft tire is going to have more grip and a hard tire is going to have less grip. And then he said that's actually a complete misconception. There's a lot more that goes into the tire compounds than just soft and hard rubber. There's a lot of chemistry involved in the Michelin labs, as well as all the others have just insane amounts of testing that they do with these tires. But you're right in the fact that from the cross climates I've experienced, three peaks snow rated, which is awesome, pretty decent dry grip, pretty decent wet performance. And then they do have about 80% of the capability in the snow of maybe a dedicated Blizzak, for example. But the downside, like you pointed out, is they are pretty firm from my experience. They have really tough sidewalls. So we're on the generation 2 of the cross climate. The first cross climate wasn't offered in the US, but it was available around the world. And I think that tech's just going to get better and better. But it's a good option if you don't have the space or the coin to go from all season to a winter tire. That's not a bad way to do it.
So, you know, mom, just your mom, my wife, just bought a new car, a BMW iX, the electric BMW, and she wanted snow tires on her car. I offered to get her the all seasons because that would have made my life a lot easier, but she was pretty set. She wanted the performance of the snow tire, so I did get her some dedicated snow tires, and I think a lot of people feel that way. They may not trust the all-weather tire quite yet. You know, we've had good experiences with them, but the downside is you do have to take them off and on, and that, especially at discount, that can be a whole day process. Not that they're not, you know, efficient. It's just that there's, in Colorado especially, so many people who are switching to snow tires right now. Now, there's also summer tires, right? And these are usually high-performance tires that are on sports cars, performance cars, and those are complete, you know what, in the snow. Goat on ice, you do not want to take them in the snow. You'll have less than zero traction. And then there are, of course, the tires that come with any new car for the most part, and those are all seasons. What about all seasons, Tommy?
Well, they don't work particularly well in any season. But they
true that.
I mean, but I think you're kind of oversimplifying it.
Well, I know I'm oversimplifying
because you
it.
Also have like the world of all terrains, which is big and varied. The world of maximum traction or mud terrains. And you've got the world of performance winter tires and touring winter tires. And
That's a whole pot. You know, I mean, the way we would do that here at TFL is we'd get like that engineer you were talking to and interview him and just do a dedicated show.
I have.
And I don't want to do that.
It's on a TFL talk. It's
exactly
got a picture of a four under the thumbnail.
And I don't want to do that show right now. I kind of want to keep it simple and keep it interesting so that people can, you know, listen to this and just kind of get an overview as opposed to getting deep down into the different compounds. I've interviewed those engineers, Tommy, and after about 10 minutes, my eyes roll up in my head. And I understand all the technology and all the tread compound and all of the different science that goes into it, but it can be very dry.
But it's the most important aspect in a vehicle's winter performance.
True that.
Because you only have 4 points that your car touches the ground at, right?
Yeah.
And it's not with a differential, and it's not with a powertrain. It's with tires, right? Those are the things that make your vehicle go, stop, and turn. And I think something you said earlier is true. If it was me, if I had like a Golf, or a Prius, right, and I didn't like the snow performance, a lot of people in Colorado sell that and immediately buy a RAV4. But for me, the first thing I would do, instead of spending several thousand dollars to get a bigger all-wheel drive vehicle, is I would spend the money to buy a good snow tire. Because while all-wheel drive will help you get going, it's not necessarily going to help you turn, and it certainly isn't going to help you stop, whereas a good set of rubber will.
Yeah, but nobody does that. That's like the common advice that you tell everybody, throw some snow tires on it. But I think the allure of a reason to get a new car, especially in Colorado, is too strong to actually do the logical thing, and that is to get snow tires. So let's talk about all-wheel drive. We won't get into four-wheel drive, which is a truck thing, or we can. I guess Jeeps also have four-wheel drive, but let's talk about that. Obviously, all-wheel drive all the time is the best when it comes to snow performance. Having all four tires power the car all the time, which is not as common as you might think. Because in a four-wheel drive car, if you do that, you get crabbing, especially if you get onto a piece of tarmac that's not snowy. Then I would say front-wheel drive is the next best thing, and then rear-wheel drive. Now, if you're a good driver, you can make rear-wheel drive work as well as front-wheel drive, but I think that takes a little bit more skill because I think in the snow, it's almost easier to steer a car when you're pulling it as opposed to steering a car when you're pushing it.
Well, yeah, you also have the argument that, you know, a front-wheel drive car is going to have more initial traction because typically a car is going to be front engine. It's got more weight over the drive wheels. I mean, no, there's a lot to four-wheel drive systems and all-wheel drive systems. And I think to break down into my – there's a whole discussion about this. But to break it down, in my opinion, the difference between a four-wheel drive and an all-wheel drive setup is a four-wheel drive setting has the ability to switch between two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive with the addition of a low-range transfer case or set of gears, right?
Like a Wrangler.
Yeah, or a Bronco or a 4Runner or a lot of full-size trucks, right?
But unlike a Range Rover – why don't you talk about that next?
Well, a Range Rover – is a, and this is why it's complicated, right? A Range Rover typically has a full-time four-wheel drive system in that there is power going to all four wheels at all times, various amounts, because of a center differential, and there's no ability to go between two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive, but it's still four-wheel drive in my book because it has a low range, right? So that's a very good way of engineering a four-wheel drive system. It's very heavy. It also has big cost in terms of fuel economy. So very few vehicles actually operate like this. You mentioned Range Rovers.
Land Rovers.
Like the Toyota Land Cruiser operates like this, right?
Yeah.
Both the old ones and the new ones. The Lexus GX, that's a full-time four-wheel drive system. Lexus LX.
Some trucks you can do a full-time four-wheel drive if you want.
But not really.
Okay. Well, let's not get into it.
We have an hour. What else are we going to talk about? Well, this is good stuff.
The problem is you're getting into Andre's world.
Because, no, but there's a lot of SUVs that do this, too.
All right. I'll let you go with SUV.
Where?
Yukon.
Yes, there you go. Where they will have a four auto setting, which is different than what, for example, a Land Cruiser has, is that in four auto, the Yukon is going to default to a rear-wheel drive setting until it detects slip, and then it's going to engage the front axle, right? Which is perhaps not as durable or as immediate as having a full-time center transfer case like you or center differential like you might have in a Lexus GX.
And same thing for a Tahoe or a Suburban.
Yeah, or any number of full-size trucks. Or even Jeeps do this, right?
Yeah.
Ford Bronco does this. There's an auto setting on the transfer case. And then you come to the world of cars, right, where some cars do have that center differential. Very few, like an Evo.
Yeah, we still have the Tucson – it's the Tucson XRT, which is the off-road one. Mm-hmm. And there's a little button in the middle you can push that locks the center diff.
Nope.
Well, that's what the button says.
Yeah, but it's not what it does.
What does it do?
It's lying to you.
It's lying.
Lying.
Tucson, Hyundai, what?
So the way that the vast majority of cars and crossovers operate is they are a front-wheel drive-based all-wheel drive system. And the way it typically works is the vehicle will operate in front-wheel drive mode 90% of the time, cruising along on dry pavement. Maybe when you stop to accelerate, right? Maybe when you go full throttle, maybe if it's raining, and certainly if it's snowing, what the vehicle can do is engage a clutch, usually a clutch in something called the power transfer unit, which then activates the
PTU,
the drive shaft, and the rear wheels, right? And what that button does, like on the Tucson, is it's telling the vehicle to engage that clutch and that PTU as more frequently or as often as it can, right? So it still is technically a front-wheel drive-based system, and there are different vehicles use different things. Like some vehicles use a viscous coupling, right? There's a lot of ways to do these front-wheel drive bias systems. One of the biggest manufacturers is a company called Haldex. They did a lot of stuff, and they still do a lot of stuff for Volkswagen, for the Audi group, for Volvo, right? Very, very common. But yeah, it's interesting that it looks like a center locker, and it may act like a four-wheel drive system in some ways, but it certainly isn't the same.
Yeah, for all you folks like in Florida and Arizona that you've tuned out 10 minutes ago because you don't get snow, well, I guess in Arizona, if you go up to a Flagstaff, you'll get snow. This also applies to wet weather traction.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, any slippery surfaces. So don't be like, hey, it's only for snowbound states. It could also apply to you, especially with all the hurricane folks in Florida get, right?
Yeah. And then you have the world of all-wheel drive, like the BMW. A lot of the Germans do this.
X-Drive.
It's a rear drive rear drive biased all-wheel drive system with the ability to engage the front axle, which is kind of a different feeling when you're in the snow.
Yeah. And then we should also talk about, especially in the snow, the difference that ground clearance makes, and I'll give you a good example of that. So, like I was saying, I used to own a Volvo V70R, which is a station wagon, and that had the Helideck system where it was front-wheel drive, and when the front wheel started to slip, then it would send power to the rear wheels.
That's what we call the slip-then-grip system.
And there was a huge snowstorm here in Colorado where your mom got stuck on the bus about 15 miles from our house. And I was like, aha, I've got Blizzaks, I've got all-wheel drive, I'm going to go rescue my lovely wife. I felt like I was going to be a knight in shining armor. I got about a mile from the house and I almost got stuck. And you know why that is?
A ground clearance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I piled up all the snow under the car. And so once you get high-centered, it doesn't matter, you know, the tires, the all-wheel drive system, you're just going to be like, you know, a beached whale, which is almost what happened to me. And then I managed to get it unstuck, drove home, and my neighbor, who at that time had the supercharged Frontier, do you remember those?
Mm-hmm. First gen, yeah.
Right. He just jumped in there with me, and we blasted through the snow. It didn't matter that it was, you know, a foot deep. The truck just had no problems whatsoever. And so I would say that one of the important things, that if you really are talking about deep snow or potential Colorado-style snow, you do want ground clearance. And most passenger vehicles have, I don't know, between what, 5 and 7 inches of ground clearance?
Yeah.
Which isn't enough.
Well, it depends how often you're seeing snow, right?
Yeah, it depends if you're going up into the high country in Colorado.
Right, then
snowstorm.
Maybe it won't be enough. But for a lot of people, I mean, what's cool now, we're in an interesting era where, especially since everyone's buying crossovers, the sedans that do remain are now pretty much all available with all-wheel drive, like the Nissan Altima, available with all-wheel drive, the Toyota Camry, available with all-wheel drive, right?
Yeah.
Stuff which hasn't always been the case.
So I went on a program with Toyota, with Sofian and some other YouTubers, and Toyota had their all-wheel drive Camry, mm-hmm. and then remember the last generation all-wheel drive Prius. And we should talk about that system too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Sofian, sorry, dude, managed to take it into the field and get it stuck right away because of ground clearance, right? He just sank into the snow, and that was all she wrote.
Sure.
Now, let's talk about the Toyota system, which is also different, where you have no physical connection between the front and the rear wheels.
Yeah, so this is a system they use on their hybrid vehicles, which is now pretty much everything. And the way it works is that the front wheels are driven by the gasoline engine and electric motor, right? And the rear wheels are driven exclusively by an electric motor. So there's no drive shaft connecting the two. It's a great system for packaging because you don't have to run a prop shaft down the middle of the vehicle and have space for that. So it's really good for packaging. Also good for efficiency, right? You don't have to spin a drive shaft and the PTU and all that entails. Now, the early systems, this has been around for probably, I don't know, 15 years, 20 years now, going on the EO wheel drives. They didn't have a very meaty rear motor. So what happens is they really act like front wheel drive cars in the snow with like a mild push. Like someone is just kind of gently shoving you from the rear when you're in deep situations. And the worst offender was the Prius all-wheel drive in the last gen. Had a 7-horsepower rear motor that only worked up to like 40 miles an hour and was super limited. Now, from my experience, that's why we do the slip test, is the newer systems are generally better, right? They're able to give you more intervention from that rear axle to give you more bites to get out of, you know, tough situations. Still, in my opinion, maybe not as good as a mechanical all-wheel drive. At least that's what Hyundai will try to tell you in their marketing materials. And then, like, that's another good point we should talk about too really quick is, like, Subaru claims, like, symmetrical all-wheel drive, right? And
I was going to get to that in a second.
Well, what I want...
Can you just hold off on that?
Okay.
Don't be angry.
No, I'm not angry, but we're having a conversation.
I know, but I didn't want to jump to that because I wasn't done with the slip test yet, so I didn't want to jump to something else. So what I was going to say, Tommy, is that for those of you guys who aren't familiar, Tommy here does a really great slip test, which basically is a great way to see just how good a four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive system is. And what we do, or what you do, Tommy, is you put the car on rollers, and then you see if it could pull itself off those rollers, given either two wheels on or three wheels on or even four wheels on.
No.
Never four wheels?
Never four wheels.
Yeah, probably could never pull yourself off.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a really good scientific way of seeing how the car allocates power. So let's talk about how the car allocates power, because that really is the kind of the heart of most modern four-wheel drive system. And then we'll talk about electric cars too, because that's a whole other kettle of fish, and we should talk about that. But really what it's about is, can the car, when one wheel is slipping, stop that wheel from slipping and then send power to the wheel that does have traction?
Yeah, and it's the terminology is interesting, because we're testing a couple of things in that test. The first thing we're looking at is how the vehicle can respond to a stuck situation with the front and the rear axle. So we do the front wheel slip test, where we get the front wheel stuck, make the rear wheels push us off, right? Typically easy for a mechanical four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive system. Difficult for the Toyota system we were talking about, because those motors can be dinky. Yeah.
I think the people out there are wondering, what were some of the cars that succeeded, that did really well, and what were some of the cars that did poorly?
Well, pretty much everything passes the front wheel slip test.
Okay, so two wheels on, every car. So it manages to send power to the rear wheels.
Both front wheels are stuck.
Yeah.
This is what some engineers would describe as zero mu, which is like the coefficient of grip, or maybe I should say negative mu, because you're a little bit in the roller situation.
Are these engineers who love cats? Cows?
These are engineers who are too deep into it. So the vehicles that struggled, though, were like the Gen 1 Toyota all-wheel drive systems. They didn't have enough rear motor torque to push off. So that was the first test. And then we would do something called the diagonal slip test, where we get like a left front and a right rear. Kind of like a cross-ditch test simulated. And that tests a couple of things, not only torque distribution front and back, but also the ability of the traction control or brake lock differential or brake force management, whatever, to slow down the spinning wheel to send wheel speed to the one that's got traction. And the way that the physics works on this, and look, I'm not a physicist, but as engineers have explained it to me, if you have an open differential, right, you technically, in a tough situation, have one wheel drive, right? You get one wheel stuck in the ice, and that thing's going to spin and spin and spin, and the wheel on the ground is going to remain stationary. And the physics behind it is the torque being applied to both wheels is the same. It's just that it's very minimal applied to the wheel on the ground, because it's equal to the one that's just spinning. Where with a locked differential, the wheel speed is the same, but the torque application is actually different between the two. Way in the weeds. So that's the other thing we're testing for is, can an open differential slow down that spinning wheel with
okay, what with cars did badly? Let's cut to the chase. On all three wheels on the slip, you know, where basically what ends up happening, I'm going to simplify this, is when you got three wheels on the rollers, the system has to be able to send power to the one wheel that's not on the roller to pull it off, right? That's a really good test of how well the system allocates power, because obviously when three wheels are spinning, there's only one wheel that can actually push it off the rollers. What cars did well and what cars did not so well?
So there's two variants in the three-wheel slip test. The first is one front wheel on the ground. And
I think we're getting deep in the weeds.
No, but it's important.
I know, but I've asked this question like 10 minutes ago. People are dying to know what cars did well and not well.
Because it's not a black and white answer. It's not that every car is going to do well in our
picture. But you've done these tests. Can you just kind of think of which ones that did well for you and which ones that didn't do so well?
Well, at which test?
At the one where the three-wheel. Yeah.
Three-wheel front or three-wheel back? Because those are two very different answers.
Just, I guess people want to know what car is good in the snow, and so what car succeeds in the test and what car fails in the test.
So when you have only one wheel on the ground
and
it's a front wheel,
right?
Most crossovers can do that.
Okay.
Because most crossovers are front-wheel drive biased.
Which ones couldn't do it?
I don't have that list off the top of my head.
Fair, okay.
If you all of a sudden move that only traction wheel to the back, then the vast majority of crossovers really struggle, because they're front wheel biased and those are stuck, and the PTU doesn't have enough oomph to push it off. So, for example, like vehicles that have really struggled in the past are those all-wheel drive systems from Toyota, except for something like the Crown, which has a really beefy rear motor in some of the bigger applications. Same thing like the RAV4 Prime.
Didn't we just have a GM vehicle that struggled?
No.
I thought we had an Equinox that really did.
I don't think I put that on the rollers.
No?
So that's a good example of one that struggles. I've had some pretty tough times with some of like the entry-level Honda products, like the HR-V, really struggles, which is interesting because the IVTM4 cars, like the Pilot and the Passport, are excellent. They are so good at what they do. Most four-wheel drives do pretty well across the board, like most dedicated off-roaders. I just had a Bronco really struggle with the three-wheel slip test in the front. It wasn't able to allocate torque where it needed to go. That was super interesting.
Was it a Bronco Sport or a full-on Bronco?
Full-size Bronco. Bronco Sports with the twin-clutch rear diff do really well. Most of the GM products I've tried with a twin-clutch rear diff setup do really, really well. Like some of the AT4, like Acadias, are very, very solid. Grand Cherokees typically do really well. And then Toyota, the mechanical four-wheel drives, like a 4Runner, do really well. The mechanical Camry does really well, in my opinion. But then the new Camry, that's all-wheel drive, didn't do very well at all. So I find the mechanical Toyota four-wheel drive systems to be very good.
That was great, Tommy. Thank you. I think that's what people were curious about. I'm just thinking, if I'm at home listening to this, I want to know, is my car going to succeed or fail on this test?
Yeah.
Anyway, go to AllTFL or head on over. Are those mostly in TFL off-road?
They're all mostly in TFL car. I've done like, I don't know, 100 of them or something, and I need to make like a spreadsheet of the pass and fail.
That'd be a good idea.
It'd be cool to reference.
But, all right. So let's talk about the part that we still haven't talked about, and that is different drive modes.
Okay.
So a lot of cars have a snow mode. What does that do, and does it actually help?
Well, it depends on the manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
The old snow modes would just simply lock you in second gear, right?
Yeah, so basically you wouldn't have a lot of wheel spin at the start because you would start by having slower spinning wheels, so you wouldn't get that kind of like, that we used to get when I was at home in the 70s, you know, growing up, where you only had one tire that was spinning. And whenever there was a snowstorm in Chicago, that's all you would hear when you got up in the morning, was people trying to push their cars out and one wheel spinning.
But then some of the new snow modes can also bring in stuff like throttle response, right? Traction control intervention, even some stability control intervention. And what's interesting is like when traction control first became super prevalent, like late 90s, early 2000s, right? And then through the mid 2000s, when you would like give it some gas, the wheel would spin and then the computer would just shut down the throttle, right?
Yeah.
So I remember mom had this Prius that was awful in the snow because with traction control on, it was just cutting power left and right. The new traction control systems can operate more like brake force differential systems where maybe they're not dialing back on the throttle, but they're bringing in on the brake force, and those work pretty well. So snow modes, I think it's more of a marketing thing personally.
Yeah, here's how I would put it. I have, outside of one brand, and you can guess that brand, one maker, I have had very little luck in using snow mode to actually give me more traction or get me unstuck or make it easier to drive on snow. What brand would that be?
I don't know.
Range Rover or Land Rover?
I haven't experienced that.
Yeah, they're, I think they're programming, because they invented basically off-road trail management or on-road trail management, however you want to say it. They were the first to come up with it. They actually have programmed it, so I think the snow mode does make it easier to drive in snow. With all the other cars, snow mode is just either, like you said, it cuts power or it doesn't provide any more security or stability than, you know, non-snow mode.
I think with the Land Rovers, what you said is bang on the money with everything except snow mode.
Okay, fair.
Like rock mode and mud mode have a huge difference.
Yeah.
Snow mode just kind of nothing. Yeah, they call it grass, gravel, snow. And they all, the same kind of thing where it's so forceful with cutting power. Not sure it makes that big of a difference.
Well, the problem is, for most manufacturers, is that basically you're dealing with, what did you call it, negative mu? The cross between a cow and a cat? Mu?
No, negative mu in the real world is technically impossible.
But you know what I'm saying? You have no traction.
Right. That would be like zero mu. Right. Zero mu is like an ice rink, right? Where there's no.
Yeah, exactly.
The reason the rollers are negative mu is because the vehicle's actually sunk into a little crevice.
I'm just kidding, Tom. Okay. You don't have to correct me. It's fine.
No, I'm not correct. I'm just explaining.
I'm just saying. I'm basically saying the reason that those snow modes don't work is because in most situations in the snow, you don't have a lot of traction.
So what about the Subaru discussion you wanted to talk about later?
What do you want to talk about Subaru?
Well, I mean,
I was going to talk about X. You were going to talk about, all symmetric all-wheel drive and then X mode, which is just another form of stability control that they called X, which is super popular right now. Apparently X is way cool with everything being X. And, you know, they made it seem like they had some kind of magic that they would sprinkle on the all-wheel drive system with X mode. But in our testing, limited testing, because Subaru, as you know, doesn't give us cars, it doesn't do any more than any other manufacturer's snow mode.
The new, like, the new one I did try that
the
brought
Secret
in,
Double X, whatever.
It was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, Subaru
in
used
snow
to,
or just
in the,
off-road?
In the rollers. Oh. So Subaru used to tout symmetrical all-wheel drive being better than like the Halidex slip than grip. And I think there used to be a lot of truth to that. But the new front drive base systems are so quick and responsive, I really don't think there's that much of an advantage to going with the Subaru anymore. I do genuinely think that everyone else is pretty much at that level. I mean, the old Subaru four-wheel drive systems were super cool and super innovative because very few manufacturers in the 70s and the 80s were putting four-wheel drive in a passenger car, right? You needed a Scout or a CJ.
Yeah, Subaru and Audi were the first two brands that actually went with all-wheel drive all the time.
Yeah.
Most of their cars.
And my favorite systems that Subarus have done are the 80 systems where you actually pull a lever and then it locks it front to rear in four-wheel drive. And they're awful on road. You can only do like 45 and they don't have enough power to begin with and they're really bad. But in the snow, they're so effective. And the cars were super lightweight, which was also a huge pro. Low center of gravity with the Boxer. So like I think back in the day, they had a huge advantage in that kind of realm. Nowadays, I think their advantage isn't minimal, if anything.
And let's talk about electric vehicles.
Yeah, what do you want to talk about with EVs?
Well, let's talk about snow performance with EVs. Now EVs obviously are a different kettle of fish, mainly because of their weight. So that accounts for two things, right? When it's hard to get the weight moving, and once you get it moving, it's hard to stop. Mm-hmm. So the heavier something is, basically, weight is deterrence to performance, be it on-road, off-road, right? The heavier something is, the worse it's going to perform. And when you get, you know, a very heavy vehicle moving in a straight line and you want to turn, it's going to want to go in a straight line. So in general, EVs, I would say, because of their weight, are not as good in snow conditions. The other problem with EVs, and there's a couple, there's three actually, the other problem is obviously, the batteries don't work as well, so you lose range in the snow because usually when there's snow, it's cold. And then they also burn through tires quicker.
Yes.
So we took those tires off my wife's IX. And she had put on, or the car had 14,000 miles, and they were getting ready to be, they weren't quite to the wear marks, but they were certainly getting close to the wear marks after 14,000 miles from the OEM tires.
There are some advantages to an EV in the snow.
Yep.
And like what? When we talk about traction control, right, a gasoline vehicle can only make so many changes a second with either fueling or timing, right? Where an EV, in theory, because it's just electrons, right? You could have a nearly infinite number of adjustments to motor output per second. So you could have really precise traction control.
So I think I agree with the concept, but I don't agree with the reality of it. Remember when we took the Rivian off-road and it just what ends up happening is the system is trying very, very hard because it can to send power to whichever wheel has traction. And because we were in deep snow on a snowy trail, none of the wheels had traction. And eventually the system kind of just gave up and wouldn't turn any of the wheels whatsoever.
Well, I agree. Like in an off-road snowy environment, I think there's maybe not an advantage. But in a typical snowy environment.
How about like on a skating rink? What do you think an EV would do?
I think it would do better than the gas car.
Okay.
If you lined up a gas car and an EV,
that'd be a fun test.
Full throttle.
Hey, all you tire manufacturers out there, that's one for you.
Yeah, that'd be pretty
cool.
Or
the tire rack, yeah.
Yeah,
throw a gas car against an electric car in an ice skating ring.
Yeah, no, I think that would be really interesting. The other advantage of an EV in the snow, and in the winter, I should say, is you can typically precondition an EV from an app, which is a very underrated feature.
Well, you can also remotely start a gas car and do that nowadays.
Yeah, perhaps, but
that's not performance. That's just comfort and convenience.
Well, I mean, but when you think so, like my wife would love that feature, right?
Okay, yeah.
The car's plugged in outside.
Yeah.
Sure, she could remote start it, but then she's burning gas to heat a cabin. When it's plugged into the wall, you remotely start it. You get most of the heat into the cabin off of shore power instead of battery power. And then you can even defrost the windshield, right? Come out, car's nice and toasty warm, get in it and go. Car can be parked inside, even like a cold parking garage. Precondition it, right? You're not going to gas somebody out. So that's kind of cool. Like, I'm not going to lie. I think that's a pretty cool feature.
All right. Well, let's talk at the end of this as we're getting out of time, about the cars that we think are good in the winter versus the cars that maybe aren't good in the winter. Now, we set some ground rules, right, and that is if you want to have a car that's good in the winter, throw on some snow tires or all-weather tires. But let's just say, you know, let's just say they're all wearing all seasons, which is a very bad idea for snow driving. I would say, in general, for me, I like anything that's good off-road in the winter. So that means Jeeps, Wranglers, Broncos, Range Rovers, Land Rovers, right? Anything that can go off the beaten trail, even trucks, is good in the winter. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean I feel the most secure. If there's a lot of snow, I do feel secure because obviously the car won't get high centered. But if there's not a lot of snow, you know, there's nothing better than like an all-wheel drive performance car with snow tires.
Yeah, that's an interesting distinction.
Yeah, that really gives you a lot of confidence, actually.
I agree with your off-road analysis. My only asterisk is, and this is a big one, and because if you're listening to this, you're a car person likely and you probably don't care, but like my mom sold a 4Runner because of the snow performance. Not that 4Runner wasn't awesome in the snow, but she forgot to put it in four-wheel drive once, came around a turn and swapped ends, right? And that is something like that base Wrangler, incredible in the snow, but
you gotta have it in all-wheel drive.
You gotta have it in four-wheel drive. And sometimes, especially like in the shoulder seasons in Colorado, we go snow, dry on multiple times during a drive. You can get kind of old having to switch between two high and four high.
That's why like Range Rovers are nice because they're all-wheel drive all the time.
Yeah, and I like the performance car thing too. I think that's pretty clever. Yeah, a little bit of snow.
Or any IX, any, you know, or all four, or whatever the designation is for something that's all-wheel drive does really well. I think, you know, here in Colorado, Subaru seems to be the brand that a lot of people trust for going into the winter because they're all-wheel drive. And same thing for Audi.
Yeah, I don't think Subaru or Audi has much of an edge anymore over the Hondas and the BMWs. No, because a lot of the Quattro systems are just a very refined Halidex, which is fine. I mean, I think some of the low lights for me are the older Toyota all-wheel drive systems and even some of the newer ones like on the Camry Hybrid, maybe the Sienna, just not all that impressive. Fine for most uses, but unless things get really deep, you might want to look elsewhere. And then I think the highlights for me are vehicles like the Passport, IVTM4, Pilot, the Bronco Sport, really, really good. Any of these new twin clutch things are typically very, very good.
I think any Jeep is actually really good for the most part.
Yeah, Compass is the least good, but Grand Cherokee Wrangler are very good. Let's see what else is pretty good. Some of the GM stuff is pretty darn good. Volvo systems, I've had very good luck with the Volvo all-wheel drive systems now. Actually, they're very good.
Not a lot of ground clearance for the most part. The crossovers have more, but we just have the station wagon, the V60.
The Hyundais and the Kias are typically always like very middle of the road. They're going to be fine. They're not going to be exceptional. They're not going to be bad, but they're just going to be perfectly fine.
And here's irony, right, Tommy? And we can't forget about this. Like a classic thing that happens in Colorado is you can have the most snowworthy car with the best tires for the conditions. And you could be going up to the ski area, but there will always be somebody driving from California who forgot that we get snow in Colorado, and they'll go off the road, and then you'll come to a grinding stop. So at that point, you know, the best car is the one with the most fuel in it.
Here's an interesting discussion. How about some pieces of tech that make a car very good or very bad in the winter? So, like, heated windshields. Do you like heated windshields?
I'm dying to try the new one in the Defender. It snowed last week. It didn't seem to help that much because what ends up happening when you have a lot of snow, it does tend to accumulate on the side, you know, and it just gets deeper and deeper until the wiper only gets like a half a stroke before it hits all that snow and you got to get out. And so I'm hoping that the front heated windshield actually melts that stuff. I'm not sure it's going to do it or whether it's worth it for the 1 or 2 days here you use it for the cost of replacing it, because here in Colorado we replace windshields like Tic Tacs. I mean, they just get broken all the time.
Expensive.
And those things are very expensive. I know remember a couple of years ago we did a video where we were driving a Jeep, a Wrangler, and because the heating grates across the front of the windscreen weren't long enough, it got so iced up that we could barely see. That's another piece of tech. The other one that almost killed me and you once was we had a loaner of a Land Cruiser that came from California, and you Californians seem to like to put water in your windshield wiper fluid. And that, of course, froze up, which made it almost impossible to see because you couldn't squirt off the road grime from the highway.
But that wasn't Toyota's fault.
No. I'm just saying it was a California thing. Yeah.
I mean, that's basic piece of tech. I'm thinking like some cool things I've seen lately.
Okay, like what?
Jeep offers it. Mercedes does it. GM cars used to do it.
Give me a hint. I like to take a guess. Swipe at this.
It's a windshield thing.
It's a windshield thing.
Yes.
And it's not a heated windshield.
Nope.
It's a windshield.
It's a wiper thing.
Heated wipers?
Nope. That is cool when they put the heating elements in the base of the windshield for the wiper,
yeah.
The Jeep Cherokee.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm lost. What are you?
No, it's when they actually put the squirter nozzle in the wiper arm.
Mm.
I think you get a very consistent spray of the windshield. I think that's really smart. Another really smart thing that a bunch of older Mercedes did, and I think the new ones do as well, are heated windshield nozzles. It's very, very smart.
Yeah, a lot of the winter packages had those.
Prevent those from icing over.
And the exact opposite is happening now because the new headlights are LED.
Yeah, big problem.
Big problem, especially like the Cybertruck where there's a kind of a groove that the light sits in. Snow gets in there and the light doesn't get hot enough to melt it and it just piles up and very quickly you can't see at night.
There's like a series of pieces of tech that we're like digressing on as a society. And one of them is the ability to clear snow and grime and ice off of headlights.
Yeah, I used to love those little wipers that the Europeans put on their cars.
Yeah, and like a lot of manufacturers have a squirter.
Do you have that on your new Mercedes?
No.
Oh, Tommy bought a new, you can see it over at AllTFL, a classic 1984 turbo diesel S.
But that has a
class.
Heated,
yeah.
Same kind of thing. It has the heated squirters.
Yeah, that's great. Cool. Winter package.
They run coolant through the squirters. That's a great point. But like a lot of old cars also used to have the little extendable pop-out cleaners that would squirt headlights. Remember those?
Yeah, they would pop out and go,
yeah.
Yeah.
Great design, right? We've gone away from that. Other thing we've completely gone away from, which is huge in winter, is recovery points, right? Every old car and truck, even like Beetles, old Mercedes, old BMWs, old Volvos, any old Japanese car, right, they would have tow points built in underneath the bumpers. So if you ended up in a ditch, you just hook something to the tow point, have your buddy drag you out, and you'd be fine. Now we only have these tie-down eyelets for like shipping and transport. You got to futz with the bumper to pop these little covers. It's all covered in snow and grime. You have to fish through your trunk to find the little tow eyelet, string it through there. It doesn't fit. I mean, it's just a mess, right? It's really bad. That's something old cars
do. A couple years ago, I was driving up Loveland Pass with my lovely wife, your lovely mom, and this car from Mexico. It was like four Mexican dudes who had come skiing in Colorado had just rammed it into a snow pile, mm-hmm. and got stuck, of course. I had a winch on the Raptor, and I was, hey, I'll help you winch out. There was nothing I could do. It was like a lawn darted into the snowbank, and I was looking for a place to winch from, and there was no place to winch. I mean, I could have winched maybe from underneath somewhere, but I was terrified because sometimes when you go into snow, it could be like a cork in a bottle, right? You could just as easily tear the suspension member out as you would move the car out of the snowbank. So I tried. I couldn't find a place. And after a while, I just said, hey, I don't want to break your car. I'm sorry. Can't help. And it was like 10 o'clock at night. It was snowing hard. It was miserable. And I said, I'll give you a ride somewhere. And just then a plow came up, and then he stopped. So I figured maybe he could figure out a way to get them out of there. The other thing I think we should talk about, Tommy, and I'm looking at that picture of the Jeep right there, is the ability to not pack snow in under your – that's why I like off-roaders, right? Because any low-slung sedan is just going to pack all that snow in the wheel well, and then next thing you know, you can't even steer the car.
Well, and a lot of older cars were really good at this. It's like – if you look at any car from the 70s, even the sedans will have like 7 inches of ground clearance and the tires are 175 in width. So they weren't throwing the same amount of snow that the new super wide tires are doing. Great point, right? A lot of new cars have just such a limited amount of ground clearance and such small fender wells for snow to accumulate. That's a really annoying problem. A lot of some new cars now are even going, like SUVs are going away from wipers, rear wipers, which is just terrible. It's really, really stupid. So there's a lot of like weird cost cutting and design changes that have been implemented in the last couple decades that I think have made cars in some ways worse.
The Ioniq 5, that didn't have, they finally added it back, but for a long time didn't have a rear wiper.
Yeah, same thing, right?
Yeah, they said the Koreans said that the aero would remove the water, and we were all like, well, it's winter.
And then the worst one are these stupid door handles that are
retracted or hidden. God, yeah, those
freeze
up.
Or you have to poke at, and then you end up getting yourself more dirty because you're trying to unretract these door handles. Really bad. I don't like frameless windows in the winter. Those can be pretty gnarly too. They can. I had a Mini where the doors would just get stuck closed if it got too cold.
And then, dude, God help you if you have a flat, because most cars do not have a spare tire. And you know, try driving on a flat tire in the ice and snow. That's not going to be very productive.
So there's just some basic pieces of hardware that cars have gone away with, which is a total shame, that because they used to be, in some ways, they were worse in the snow in most ways. But in a recovery or visibility or whatever standpoint, they were just better.
Yeah. And so I would say, once again, if you want a good vehicle in the snow, get a truck.
Yeah, but
like our neighbor with that Frontier. Get a truck. It's got everything. It's got ground clearance. You can see over the other cars, so you see what's coming. It's got usually a good four-wheel drive system. It's got a low range. They're just great. And you can, winch other people out.
I don't know if I agree, though.
No, you don't want a truck? I want a truck.
I mean, I like the concept of a truck.
Yeah.
But the problem is a snow tire is the best solution in the winter.
You can put snow tires on a truck. Nobody does.
Can you? Do people?
No, but you
exactly.
could.
Exactly. I don't think you could get snow tires for a TRX.
It's just not a thing, is it?
Yeah. And an all-terrain is not bad in the snow, as we talked about, but it's not a snow tire. And I think a snow tire in an SUV, 9 times out of 10, is going to be better than a truck on all-terrain.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I remember I was driving your old Jeep back from Moab, and I was coming down Vail Pass, and all of a sudden it got icy, and next thing you know, I was a passenger.
Yeah, I mean, and then you have the argument that...
Because a dedicated winter tire would have actually helped on ice, but the all-terrain just hey,
Well, and you made the argument that, you know, heavier cars are worse than snow. Trucks are the heaviest of the cars, right?
Especially electric trucks.
Yeah, they're very heavy. So I think in a lot of instances, a truck is better than a car, just out of the box, but I'm not sure it can be made much better than a car.
Yeah, I agree. Well, guys, I hope this has been somewhat helpful for all of you people who live in the snow belt. And for all of you people who don't, thanks for sticking with us. Maybe you'll come up here to Colorado or California or any of the ski areas, Utah, to ski. And then hopefully this has been a little bit instructive on what kind of car to rent.
And be sure to stay tuned, guys. We've got a lot more snow tire coverage coming and some more Traction A videos. So head over to Alt TFL for more of those. And this has been Tommy.
And Roman saying check out our snow sock sponsor. Those guys are really good.
K&K, yep. Yeah. Link below. They do a really cool product. Big fans of theirs, so check them out below.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Ciao.